Hello, dear listener. It's Jazza here from the Right Dishonorable podcast. Hopefully you already knew that by the fact that you'd downloaded this episode. We're back after a little bit of a break that we took after the general election. I hope you don't mind that we did that. It was kind of necessary for our sanity. We are back. We filmed a whole episode. Not filmed, we've recorded a whole episode. But in classic Right Dishonorable style, I have managed to not successfully record the introduction. So here I am giving you the introduction. We talk about the Taylor Report today, which is the report that came out from the government about stuff like 0 hours contracts and temporary contract workers from Uber and Deliveroo, which is very, very exciting. We also talked about Donald Trump Jr., and the fact that he met with some Russian people, all very conspiratorial. Then we also talked about Anne-Marie Morris, a former Tory Member of Parliament, who decided to use a very confusing turn of phrase that used the N-word. She's now been suspended from the Conservative Party. And also the fact that the darling of the centre, Emmanuel Macron, the President of France, got some flack this week for talking about the fact that Africa is poor because they have lots of children. So we talked about all of that, and hopefully we'll have an actual introduction next week. Yay, we're back. Listen, woo.
Jazza, have you used Uber before?
Oh, I'm going to have to admit that. Actually use it now.
You're a terrible person. In fact, Rebecca Long-Bailey thinks that you're immoral for using
Who's
Uber.
Rebecca Long-Bailey?
She's some Labour woman.
Oh, great.
Comes up in the media occasionally.
Excellent. Yeah, so like it's very fashionable, especially in my group of lefty liberal Corbyn voting friends, to not use Uber. But I can guarantee that a large majority of them do use it because it is a from a customer point of view, it is a fantastic service, even though they're exploitative and are very sexist to women in their offices.
Yeah, so I was,
it's a really annoying thing, like having to be mole.
Crap companies that have great services.
Which is all of them. Which is every single company.
Do you think so? I mean,
even the co-op that was meant to be like morally run ended up being run into the ground. It was terrible.
He was just taking some drugs, you know.
Cash.
Just cash on the sides. That was like Paul Flowers was the name of that guy, the chair of the co-op. We're digressing. In the scheme of things, Uber is one of the nastier companies in Silicon Valley, and there's this really good Guardian piece that kind of goes into the economics of Uber and how it came to London, which I'll link to in the show notes. But I've generally found when I've chatted to Uber drivers about working for Uber, they're all pretty positive about it.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're just like trying to get a good rating or something, but they're,
possibly.
They're all like, yeah, the work is really flexible. It's really, you know, really good.
But a lot of the ones that I've spoken to at least have it as like supplementary income.
Yeah, I found the same thing.
So
actually,
it's not many Uber drivers that I've spoken to. It's not their full-time gig. They'll have something that they'll be hustling like on the side. They'll have like a market stall or something that they run. And this is something that they do in like the late nights and the early mornings to get a bit of extra cash. And you could argue that that is the type of person who should be working for Uber, but it's often seen as exploitative. Can you explain why, Jimmy, seeing as you're the moral compass of the podcast?
Yeah, very much so. So the way Uber has treated its staff, and this is not just in the UK, it's around the world, is as self-employed kind of contractors, basically. Mm-hmm. So, and the reason they've done this is that they don't want to assume any of the legal responsibilities, such as payment for sick leave or payment for holidays or anything like that, because it just creates massive overheads for the company. The company's whole business model revolves around having no overheads in terms of servicing a fleet of taxis helping out their staff if they fall ill or anything like that. And that is why it's deemed to be exploitative. And in a way it is, but it sort of depends how it is you use that sort of job. I mean, the Taylor review, the reason it's upset.
This is the review that came out this week. Yeah. That kind of was meant to be. It was launched last year by Theresa May to great fanfare.
Well, the investigation was launched nine months ago. And Matthew Taylor, who, as we said before, is a former Blairite policy guy, conducted it. And he's recommended that they create a separate class of, quote, dependent contractor, which is somewhere between a proper employee and a self-employed person.
And we should mention that it isn't just Uber drivers that this affects. So Deliveroo is the other company that is often uses the example here, because those are the two examples that Londoners are going to be most likely to see around and use a lot, because most of the media people are in London. But also, when I worked at Facebook not so long ago, I was also under the same kind of contract as an Uber driver. So I was technically self-employed. I wasn't given sick pay or maternity pay.
I mean, did you find that a problem?
Yeah, when I was ill, I wasn't paid.
Did you say maternity pay? Just picked up on that.
I mean, or paternity pay. Okay. So Facebook, a company like Facebook actually treats its pregnant and spouses of pregnanters.
Spouses of pregnanters?
Yeah.
Pregnantees.
Yeah, that's how they're... Shut up. Actually treats them very, very well, but that wouldn't have been extended to me because I technically wasn't a Facebook employee. Oh. Even though I never once met with somebody from the company that actually employed me. So I, back then, I would have also been included in this report.
But what's your feeling on kind of the gig economy in general? Do you think it should be more regulated?
I mean, so the thing that we get hurt, that we hear an awful lot when talking about this, is that most people on stuff like gig economy positions and on stuff like 0 hours contracts, people who are part of the cash economy, so people who like do the grouting for your bathroom and you give them like 20 quid at the end of the day, they are all very happy with the circumstances in which they are working.
Well, not all of them, but the
majority of them are. Whereas I have been in that role at Facebook was most definitely a loophole so that they didn't have to employ me and give me all of the rights of a proper person. And that was as somebody in their mid-20s who was looking for a career. Like, obviously, you can't say no to working at Facebook. But also, you do feel kind of...
exploited.
What's the word? Yeah, I felt a little bit exploited when I found out that I would have to come into work or not get paid. If I was sick. And I was like, fine, I'm going to infect the rest of this office.
Slightly sadistic.
Yep.
Response. So you've been in favour of some more regulation in this area?
So this is the thing. The Taylor Report has suggested that we have a third class of worker.
Yeah.
And a lot of the pushback from especially Labour has been that, oh, we don't need this. If you have a job, then you have a job and you deserve the rights of people who have those jobs. But I think that there is need for perhaps more nuance there for the new types of work that exist. Like we said with Uber drivers and Deliveroo deliverers.
Deliveroo deliverers.
Deliveroo deliverers. They are often like supplementing additional incomes, and this isn't their full-time gig.
Well, it's a lot of the debate around zero-hour contracts, at least from Labour's point of view, neglects to mention that a lot of people are not using it as a full-time job. They're using it as, say, their students, for instance. I remember 2 years ago, I think the ONS released data, that's the Office for National Statistics, which said that 2/3 of people were happy with the hours they were getting on a 0 hour contract. Admittedly, the situation has changed since then. More people are on 0 hours, but these contracts do work for some people.
It was really interesting reading snippets of the report as well that said that although the UK post-recession has been really good at creating a ton of jobs, that it hasn't been very good at creating high-quality jobs where people have rights like sick pay and minimum wage guarantees and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we should probably talk about how Theresa May tried to use this as a kind of relaunch of her premiership.
Did she try?
Well, that was what it was hyped up as. Last week, journalists were like, Theresa May's going to relaunch her premiership. And
the thing is, I think that this was actually a really good thing that she instigated like 9 months ago when she first came in. And I think she is somebody who really does genuinely see the importance of like security in work and hard work. They're very conservative core values of you being able to get a decent job and like work your way up the ladder, and that is hindered if you are never able to get a job that has any kind of stability whatsoever. And so I am in no doubt that she genuinely does believe in this, and I understand why she kind of pinned her premiership. This was one of her flagship things. But seeing her present it today, I've not seen the whole thing because it's like 45 minutes long, and I have PlayStation 4 to play.
Yeah.
But she just, like, you can tell that she's just got the wind out of her sails, and I feel very sorry for her.
I do.
She's stumbling over her words. She's not very articulate, and she's basically put out a plea to other parties to be like, hey, we've identified a problem, maybe suggest some things, okay, thanks, because we need party consensus, because I'm the head of a minority. Bye.
So what you've kind of alluded to there is the fact that she reached out, in the American phrase, to...
she reached across the aisle.
Across the aisle to Labour to try and establish some sort of consensus on... Brexit. The irony of it is...
Oh, no, she said it about this report.
Oh, is it this report specifically?
So she's done it for Brexit too.
Okay, yeah.
I like that. You know I like politicians of different stripes coming together and working together. The coalition was a blooming 5-year wet dream for me. But this, just the way that she's doing it and the way that Labour are able to persistently bat her outreach away is just... very sad, and I feel very sorry for her, and I just want her to go walking with her husband again. She deserves another holiday.
It does seem to me that with Theresa May, when she initially came to power, she was portrayed, even by a lot of the media, as the only adult in the room, compared to Boris Johnson, Michael Gove, and the rest of them.
To be fair, when that's your company.
They had a point, but there seems to have been this stampede... not even since the election, but since the election campaign, towards the other extreme point of view, where everything that she does is portrayed as weak and incompetent and fragile. And I don't really think that that's probably a correct impression of what's going on.
Yeah, she's never been very good at media appearances, really.
You say that, but she was famous for a very long time for her nasty party Tory speech. So when she was, I think she was chair of the Tory party for a while, and she... went to the Conservative conference and said the Tories have become known as the nasty party, and that was seen as, you know, a big deal for a very long time. It was a signal that she was in touch with the way people felt about the Tory brand.
And she's done an awful lot of really good stuff in getting more women into Parliament and things like that. Like, she's not an inconsequential politician.
Yeah, I think that there's... I mean, we're finding this out with David Cameron and in relation to our current crop of politicians.
Oh,
but
I miss Dave Cameron.
Exactly. Whenever there's a politician in power, people fucking hammer them. And then as soon as they're out the door, people are like, oh, that guy wasn't so bad. Maybe we should...
No, Blair is the counter to that. Yeah. When he was in power, everybody thought he was hunky-dory. And then he left and he became Satan.
Well, you know...
Call a spade a spade.
Moderation, you know, balance views, or something. I
definitely
don't know. Shall we move on?
There was one other thing that I wanted to talk about that came out of this report, because it wasn't just about insecure work. It also addressed what he what Matthew Taylor called the cash jobs. That brings in about, he estimated, £6 billion a year. That goes untaxed or potentially untaxed, because there's no record of just cash in hand jobs. And like, as the person who is paying it, like, legally nothing lands on you in order to, in terms of having to say how much you paid anybody. Everything is on the onus of the self-employed person. But the fact is that very few people actually end up claiming the money that they get cash in hand. And I know an awful lot of people, and I've certainly never done it myself, where I've had cash in hand jobs and not paid tax on it. But is it... like, it's really interesting, because in the past there has been, like, Ed Balls got burned for saying that he kept notes on how much cash he paid, like, plumbers and stuff. Chuka Amuna said something similar as well. And then a conservative minister in 2012 said a similar thing.
Kept notes in the sense that they wanted to track.
How much money was there. And they got widely slated in the press. I think a lot of that is to do with some of the most most ardent readers of The Mail and The Sun.
I think probably more the Sun. Not to stereotype too much.
I mean, stereotypes exist for a reason.
Yeah.
But an awful lot of their readers are like...
White van men.
White van men. Is that offensive? I don't know. But I don't really understand why it's controversial for people to pay tax on cash in hand transactions.
Did Taylor suggest any measures to counteract cash in hand?
I don't think so. I think he just said it was a bit, this thing is happening and it's bad.
I think so long as cash exists, people will be paid via cash for jobs and it won't get taxed. But, I don't really see how you can do anything about it.
Like, you would make it illegal to not claim it. So at the moment, it's not illegal. It's like encouraged.
You mean it's not illegal not to declare your earnings?
It's illegal. But as the person who's paying the person, it's not illegal to say how much you've paid people.
Right. So it would put the onus on the person making the payment.
I feel like that would be the only way of being able to do it.
Right, and how do they alert the tax man?
I don't know how tax law works, Jimmy.
Taxes are so complicated anyway.
Anyway, well, you enjoy going over this for work, seeing as it is your job.
That's fun.
Shall we move on to Trumpy McTrumperson?
Yeah, so the Donald Jr., as he's probably not known, but...
I mean, probably actually is.
Maybe, yeah.
Let's be fair.
The Trumpster Jr.
He
met up with this Russian lawyer to get incriminating evidence about Hillary Clinton.
There's this tabloid journalist called Rob Goldstone, who's from the UK, who's an interesting character. Because he was photographed wearing a Russia shirt after Trump won and said, hedging bets. And that photo has now been taken down, very appropriately.
Mm.
But he suggested that Donald Trump Jr. met with this Russian lawyer who is a representative for a lot of influential people, because this lady apparently had some dirt on the Clinton campaign. This doesn't seem to be, because she's not an official in any capacity, despite the fact that she represents some higher ups, this doesn't seem to be in itself dodgy dealings when it comes to legalities.
It's dodgy, but it's not illegal.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But there are precedents. So, for example, the Al Gore campaign in 1999 or in 2000 were given and leaked documents for the debate that was going to happen between George W. Bush and Al Gore, and then they turned them over to the police. This is obviously not what the Trump campaign decided to do. We should also say that Donald Trump Jr. has never... I don't know about his role in campaigns, but he's not an official White House person.
Mm.
He's not got an official government role. He is the head of the Trump organization.
I mean, the division between Trump's corporate interests and his White House administration is not as clear as one might want it to be.
It's as clear as mud.
You could say.
Donald Trump Jr. met up with this lady, and apparently they just talked about adoption and said nothing and never said anything about Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there've been all these rumors kind of circulating about Trump and his exact involvement or the exact involvement of his campaign with the Russian administration during the election. But at the end of the day, even if there's pretty solid evidence, and this is very solid evidence, it's more solid than has previously been found.
Yeah, there's emails. There's emails where he is introduced to the lady.
But if there's no appetite within the Republican Congress to impeach him and then, throw him out of the White House, then it sort of doesn't matter, really.
So I was actually joking about this to you off air. I love it when we say off air, because we're on no air. We're around a dinner table.
Yeah.
But when we were chatting beforehand, I kind of joked that I don't know what is a scandal and what isn't anymore.
Mm.
Because in terms of varying degrees of grab her by the pussy and I'm hanging out with Vladimir Putin, I just don't really know what is an impeachable offence anymore. And I'm kind of annoyed and frustrated with the appetite for impeachment that both Democrats in American politics and in specifically the Senate have for like getting rid of Trump, and also in the media.
Sorry, you're tired of that.
I'm tired of like the, oh, how are we going to impeach him? It feels like the Democrats are at the moment, and the mainstream media are egging them on. The Democrats are like the impeachment party rather than the party that has any kind of an alternative for Donald Trump.
There's a good chance that if the Democrats win a majority of seats in the House of Representatives, that they will impeach him. I think, because you only need a simple majority.
But what do they choose, Jimmy? Which one of the things?
Well, impeachments are pretty vague. Impeachment of the president is a pretty vague process in the sense that he doesn't have to have committed any crime as such. He just has to be seen to have behaved inappropriately in some way. There's a particular.
They almost did it with Bill Clinton. Or they did do it with Bill Clinton.
Yeah, they impeached
the
Bill Clinton.
House, but not to the Senate.
Yeah, so impeachment is the House of Representatives process, and then it goes to a trial, as it were, in the Senate.
Oh, and then does it get ejected like I'm a chair?
What, James Bond style?
Yeah, that would be fun.
That would be fun, although he's pretty old, so it might kill him.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is the thing that is in the Senate. You need 2/3 of the Senate to vote to remove the president from office. And, you know, there seems to me to be no way that the Democrats will ever have enough seats in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not in the next 10 years to actually remove like a Republican president.
I don't think so. I also worry about what would be the consequences of an impeached Trump, and that's President Pence. And I think that internationally, that's a lot less terrible because I think that Mike Pence is able to walk around an Italian city with other world leaders rather than being carted around in a golf cart.
Yeah.
So internationally, I think Pence is a lot more sane and level-headed and less cray-cray. But domestically, Pence is an absolute nightmare, especially for race relations and LGBTQI stuff.
But there doesn't seem to be the sense that Pence would have much chance of running his own presidential campaign and getting elected to another term.
I don't know. I've watched House of Cards.
And you thought that was a documentary?
I mean, actually, House of Cards is pretty fucking tame compared to what is actually happening in the news at the moment. So I was listening to 538, which is they're a really good like data science-y based website. If you don't know them, they do a lot of like poll crunching, but they also have a politics podcast. And they were saying that in terms of the things that they would choose to impeach Trump over, because this is what we're talking about.
There's
now
a buffet available.
Yeah, the firing of Comey as the head of the FBI would probably be further up there because there's such obvious evidence that he fired him so that he wouldn't be investigated.
Yeah. I mean, no one. There are people who dispute how corrupt Trump is, but I don't.
There doesn't. Well, who are these people? Are they Kellyanne Conway? Is it just Kellyanne Conway? I saw her in the flesh.
Yeah.
She looks terrifying.
I mean, she looks terrifying on TV.
Yeah. The scary thing is that TV's actually very accurate to how these people look. Who knew?
I thought you were going to say TV's very generous to how these people look, but we have HD
exactly. We have 4K.
Is there anything further worth saying on this? I feel we're going to return to the potential impeachment of Trump later down the line.
I mean, I'll be honest. So, we've been chatting about where we're going to take this podcast, and we want to do more stories that you haven't necessarily heard about in the news. And so maybe that means less Trump or more specific Trump things. so you could have more or less.
So it's Trump. Niche Trump or no Trump.
Niche Trump or no Trump. That should be our new slogan. But I'm sure that something else will happen. We need at least 3 things that we can like spin a wheel for, and then impeach him for it.
Yeah,
I feel like that has to be like.
I feel like there's a potential game show in this somewhere.
Jesus, definitely impeach or to not impeach. That is the question. So racism,
seeing effortlessly from Trump.
Yeah,
racism.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to go for Macron first.
Shall we do the real racism or the pretend racism first?
I guess we could do. So, what is it that Macron said? It was the point around African women or women from a specific country in Africa having 7 or 8 kids each.
And yeah,
this
so
is, this
was
regarded by some people as racist.
Yeah, this was. was it merely regarded as racism? I don't know. It was at least...
I read a bunch of articles on the internet, Jazza, and they must be representative.
And they
of
said
people's
some
opinions.
Things. Therefore, so the like he this clip of him at the G20 summit. He was asked by a journalist from the Ivory Coast, as we said in the introduction. He was kind of like suggesting a Marshall Plan for Africa.
As in the journalist was suggesting it.
The journalist was suggesting it, which in equivalent dollars cost $150 billion in today's money to regenerate post-war Europe. What about doing something for that, like that for Africa? This may seem like a little bit ridiculous, especially to like English and British audiences, but this is something that's talked about in African development an awful lot. And it's also something that tends to be more widely kind of debated in the Francosphere as well.
So I mean, is it at all related to the kind of reparations argument?
It's a similar thing to the reparations thing, but also is
that,
like...
That is to say that some, for instance, Caribbean countries have suggested the British should pay colonial reparations or imperial reparations.
Yeah, and also, of course, for the black community, specifically in the US, reparations an awful lot in terms of justifying centuries of slavery, which is an interesting thing. We won't get into
it. Nice equivocating there.
Yeah, I know. But he... So Macron, his background is as a... backdoor kind of working in the background legislative civil servant is essentially what he used to be.
Did he ever used to be a banker, or have I just made that up?
He was also a banker.
There we go. Yeah.
Haven't they all been bankers? But he basically gave one of these really... He sounded like a World Bank review, to be honest, when he like responded to this question of the possibility of doing a Marshall Plan for Africa.
But he talked about demographic challenges and
yeah,
that sort
so
of
he
thing.
Said that there needs to be a lot of collaboration rather than just the dumping of money into the African continent.
Yeah,
which is sensible.
It's,
he talked about the
also
fact
a common
that
view of foreign aid in general.
Yeah, he used the word civilizationnel. Which, as I said, isn't a word, and is kind of like a weird way of saying like there's culture. It's a cultural thing in Africa as well as just a financial thing. And then went into describing the fact that there are very challenging demographics in Africa, with some countries, specifically Niger is the one that has this birth rate, but some countries have 7 to 8 children per family. Or per woman is the way that he put it.
Yeah.
When said in like the whole thing, it makes sense and it sounds like a World Bank report.
Yeah.
When it's clipped and it just says Africa has civilizational problems, women are having too many babies, it sounds a bit racist.
Well, I can't remember which site it was. I want to say Vox, but I don't want to defame them. But anyway, this site.
What's that? Vox not being accurate.
They sort of talked about it in kind of terms of they use the phrase like black bodies and as in black bodies being seen as an inconvenience, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And I do sometimes think that there's a lot of commentators more on the social justice side who end up contextualizing things in a very inappropriate way. Like, they know the whole history of racism and unfairness and, you know, gender inequality and that sort of thing, and therefore they put modern comments in that sort of context, whereas the person saying those things may not have meant them in that sense. And it seems to me to be kind of adding a layer of meaning to things that is not necessarily accurate.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the problems with this, and it was quite funny going through English language Twitter, because nobody actually really knew what he'd said.
Yeah.
They'd just heard what he'd said through another source, and people were like, if this translation is true, then this is appalling, or if this is actually what he said, then actually this isn't that bad. And there seemed to be an awful lot of absolute confusion of people who'd only done GCSE French.
Yeah.
And...
I understand a bit of French, but not so much that I can understand the nuance of comments like this. Like, I understand individual words, but yeah.
You can order a baguette.
Yeah, I was in the same boat.
Où est le piscine?
Oui.
But yeah, that was something that I think having the foreign language response of like a world leader thrust onto the world stage, put into context that is not necessarily the best way of describing his country's relationship with Africa, and France has not the best relationship with Africa, but it is still very different to those of the US and of the UK,
yeah.
And other European countries. Like, there are obviously similarities, but it is different. And then having clumsy translations of what he'd actually said, it was quite frustrating seeing how the media had decided to kind of jump on it really, really quickly.
Yeah.
But then sooner or later, everybody seemed to get somebody who actually spoke French to explain it to them.
So you're saying there was an overreaction on Twitter?
Never!
Everyone was wrong.
Never. But you did some research on this, and you found that he's actually right to say that people are having too many babies.
Well, I did some Googling.
Can't believe you would say such a thing.
Is it quite the
Jimmy,
same as research?
Bloody disgusting.
Essentially, like I heard the comment about a woman having 7 or 8 babies each, and I thought, well, that might be controversial, but is it true? And I went to look up whether it's true or not, and there was a piece on The Guardian, of all places, which said, actually, yes, high birth rates are a problem in impoverished countries, which intuitively makes sense. It was a piece of sponsored content from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but it kind of reminds me of... It reminds me of the time that Boris Johnson got in trouble for suggesting that Barack Obama might have some nascent or hidden resentment towards the British because of how they treated his forebears in Kenya. And it turns out that The Guardian had written an editorial suggesting much the same thing years prior.
Mm-hmm.
And that often seems to me to happen. Just in general, is that you get outrage from... I mean, it's a classic thing in politics. It's outrageous when your side says it, but when my side says it, it's fine.
I don't know. Is Macron... Macron is probably my side, to be completely honest. But I do think that the stuff that Boris Johnson said was quite different.
I don't, but let's not go into the details of that at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So what is interesting about, this idea for the Marshall Plan for Africa... is that it? Whenever it's raised with world leaders, they always get really, really awkward, because it is actually something quite sensible to do if you were able to have a Africa with like low corruption, if you were able to guarantee certain things for certain demographics, and you were able to roll out stuff like birth control. This is why the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is so much on, probably commissioned that article, because a lot of what they do is contraceptives for women in Africa, so they can have control over their lives. And a lot of, especially third world development at the moment, is the empowering of women.
This is essentially what Macron was saying, though. Mm-hmm. It's, we can't just throw money at this problem. There are governance problems that need to be dealt with before the money can be used.
Mm-hmm. So. It made me think of China, actually, big time. So China used to be the place where there were the most poor people in the world. I think in the 80s, it was something like 88% of the population were below the poverty line. And then in the 2000s, it reduced to like 6%, which is crazy. Mm. But the way that China did that was through an awful lot of things like free market liberalisation, but an awful lot of centralised autocratic control, like very stable government that is able to make plans over decades rather than like single election cycles. But also there's single child policy,
yeah,
which meant that they stopped growing their
population
so quickly. And Africa has none of this. It doesn't have a highly centralized government. It has the African Union, but that has no real power over African states.
Well, also individual African countries don't have strong governance.
Yeah, exactly. There's not this ability to do like special economic zones that China did because of that lack of centralization. And there's also, of course, a lack of stability when it comes to like
civil war.
Yeah, civil war.
Small things like that.
Yeah, casual.
Yeah. So we're not too unhappy with what Macron has said.
I'm not too unhappy with what he said, but it like the fact that I don't know how I feel about it.
All right, how do you feel about Anne-Marie Morris then?
Are you going to use the word?
Do you want me to use the word?
I don't know. Do you want to? I'm not going to force you to. Because if you use the N-word on the podcast, then it's going to be the internet forever. And I know that in conversation you are happy to...
I've already used the word nigger on the podcast. There's this kind of like Voldemort allergy to it among middle class people.
And yep. It makes me very uncomfortable.
If you're using it in an academic sense, you're not using the word. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And
now I understand, and I understand you're right. Like you can use the N-word if you want.
I mean, it also makes me feel uncomfortable, but it seems very childish to say it. But that doesn't mean I condone the way that Morris used it.
So, had you ever heard the phrase "real"?
Real. Oh, is it nigger in the woodpile? Is that the phrase you used?
Yeah. Had you ever heard that before?
Not until today.
Me and I think the rest of the internet had to look it up.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a fascinating and comprehensive Wikipedia article about the origins of the phrase.
What does the phrase mean?
The phrase means, quote unquote, thank you Wikipedia, some fact of considerable importance that is not disclosed, something suspicious, wrong.
Okay, and she was using it in the sense to compare. She was using the phrase in what sense? What was she describing?
She was describing leaving Brexit without a deal as being a
an obscured fact.
Yeah,
but it doesn't seem to me obscured at all. I mean, it seems pretty obvious.
But it's something I don't know. I don't know. I think.
It's almost irrelevant what the fuck she was talking about at the time, right? Why? Like, what?
So she's been... The party whip has been suspended, which basically means she's been kicked out of the party.
Temporarily, though. She's not been permanent. She's been suspended pending investigation,
basically. So, do you think that that is an appropriate response, or should we just let some people who use racist terminology just let the sleeping dogs lie?
I don't know. I mean, from a political point of view, it's not really tenable, is it?
Mm-hmm.
But that's more a cynical argument rather than a principled
one. Yeah, like Theresa May would not have been able to let go on as business as usual. Like, if you have an MP that does this, then you kind of have to do something. Although David Cameron, before he became Prime Minister, there was a Lord who followed the Conservative Party whip, and he used the same phrase and nothing happened.
Yeah, I mean, there was a list on The Independent which listed other Tory MPs and...
who have used the N-word?
Yes, who have used
that word. Is it only Tory MPs?
Well, come on. I mean, in the Labour Party, it's anti-Semitism that's popular.
Oh, yeah, actually, so, that's fair.
Yeah, so... I mean, if you compare like the Corbyn response to what Ken Livingston, Ken Livingston's comments about the Holocaust, which I personally think were retarded, but they weren't anti-Semitic.
Well, don't
per
use
se.
Retarded on the ah.
Okay, they were dumb.
Stop using slurs.
All of our words for like dumb people come from mental illness. It's just a general thing. But his comments were idiotic. But they didn't seem to me to be anti-Semitic in and of themselves. But that's not to dispute that Labour does have a problem with that sort of thing.
Do you think hypothetically, were you the king of all things and there were no consequences to you not like bringing down her having consequences to her actions? Do you think that there should be consequences to her actions? Do you think, like, a lot of... like Caroline Lucas from the Green Party said today, do you think that she should resign as a Member of Parliament? Or do you think the people of Dorset are... Is it Dorset?
I thought it was Devon. It was Devon.
Oh, Devon, whichever the bloody... one of the D ones.
I'm tempted to fall back on the old standby of there's plenty of racist people in Britain and they deserve representation too.
Oh, one of the Jimmy classics.
It wasn't me who said that originally, just to clarify. I don't know, man. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in a party with that sort of person, but...
Do you think that this means that she's racist? Or do you think that she just is... So she's 60 years old.
Yeah, so there was this whole thing. Jeremy Clarkson, the Top Gear presenter, got in trouble a couple of years back.
Really?
I think we even discussed it for singing the original version of Eenie Meenie Miney Moe, which then second line is Catch a Nigger by the Toe.
Mm-hmm.
But he sort of like he didn't really say it, but then this video came up, and then he was crying and apologising profusely.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, well, Clarkson probably is a little bit racist, but I don't think he, like, I don't know. It's, I mean, if you believe sort of social science literature, we're all a little bit racist, or we all have racist assumptions.
Mm, we've all been raised in racist societies.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. I mean, it seems almost one of the, in modern society, the only one of the few unforgivable sins, kind of say it properly, is to be a racist. And actually, in general, and this is one of the ironies, that the right, which is generally more racist than the left, has a much more hard line on misbehaviour in general. It's much more like, once you've done something bad, you're done for life, there's no redemption. And then the left is the opposite, mm-hmm. but yet the left is the anti-racist, or is more anti-racist than the right. So, I mean, is Morris irredeemable for saying this? Probably not, but it doesn't suggest good things that it just slipped out of her mouth like
that. Yeah, the fact that it is part of her vocabulary, and she said that it was a mistake, like she tripped and fell into a racist slur.
Into an N-bomb.
And I will say that the reason that I think that me as a white person not saying the N-word, I think is important, because that word was used by people who happened to look like me to demean people who look like that. And
right.
I find that whole thing, I would never want that kind of imagery to ever be replicated again, and for that word to ever be used in that powerful way again, whether I'm singing along to a rap song or whether I'm using a turn of phrase or saying a children's nursery rhyme.
I think in the case of the rap song, it's quite a different context. I mean,
I don't know, but just having a white person say it, I think, changes the meaning of it big time.
I disagree. I think intention is kind of king in language.
It often is, but there are some things, there are some cases where it is not. And I think
we had
the
a long episode where we used the word faggot. I think we counted it up like 30 times.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the context of that was, but I'm a straight guy, and you didn't seem to think that was a problem. I know, as a gay guy, like, for you, that wouldn't necessarily be a problem.
Yeah, sure. But there is a similar argument. So I'm still very... I'm detached from the word faggot, because I haven't... I was more likely to be used... to be called queer or a puff growing up.
Right.
And so the word faggot is more of a... By the way, listener, if this is your first one, I'm a gay man. Just spoiler alert. So it was, like, more of a... it's more of a concept for me than anything.
I think the word faggot is more used in America, kind of as a slur.
It's
obviously used
like
in Britain as a slur.
So queer is now a reclaimed term. In a different way to the way that the N-word is, but the queer is now like a politicised term that used to be used as an insult to me. And it took me a very, very long time to be okay identifying myself as queer. It's now on my Twitter bio, so it's official.
I was a teenager,
saying it to me.
The word gay was used pejoratively way more often than not. Mm-hmm. I went to an all-boys school for some context there, but...
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think all schools, I don't think...
Yeah, I mean, and actually still, there are still people my age who occasionally will use it as kind of a pejorative, even though they're not necessarily homophobic generally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the way people use language is kind of... It very much depends on context, I think.
I understand people
getting offended, but it does also... Well, as I said, it depends what it is, the intention behind them using that word as...
Yeah, but no, I'm like, I still think that there are cases where the word has power on its own. And I think that there are a few cases where that is the case, and I would usually agree with you where context is king.
Yeah.
But there are some things where that just isn't the case. And I think this might be one of them. Anyway, I do think, like, if I were Morris, I'd be thoroughly bloody embarrassed and I'd quit.
Hmm. I mean, if you were Morris, though, you'd probably just be embarrassed about yourself in general.
How do you... I don't understand how you get to a point of, like, public prominence and you haven't managed to bash that out of yourself. Like, how... Like, I just do not understand.
Yeah, I'm kind of astonished as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm baffled by the story. But I suppose probably if I was Theresa May, I would say, just leave. Like, just fucking go.
Totally. Well, this is the problem. We've got a Prime Minister who needs every vote that she can get.
Yeah, well, I mean, technically Morris is an independent until the investigation concludes.
Yeah, but I wonder which way she'll vote. Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Yeah. We're the Right Dishonourable Podcast.
Britain's most profane political podcast. Yeah. Especially after that segment.
I mean, we're definitely not going to be clean for kids or so maybe that's why we're not such. Anyway. thank you so much for listening, and thank you for the people who've been asking for when we are coming back. We're back now. We'll be with you every week.
That's
we'll be
a
sick of us very soon. Yeah. Where can they find you on the internet if they want to call you a racist, Jimmy?
At JDE Nichols.
Cool.
Yeah.
And if you want to use the F word, faggot, at me, just to make sure that I have some first-hand experience with it, because I know some of you love that shit, then please do throw it my way. You can find me at Jazza John. And also, just tweet at the podcast, because it is sentient. Mm. Actually, you know what? One day I should set up a bot that just makes the Right Dishonourable Twitter handle an actual, like, responsive sentient being.
Yeah, it'll probably end up being racist, though, like Microsoft's bot.
Excellent, it'd be fun. Yeah. But you can find that at Right Dishonour. Anything else you want to say to the beautiful people, Jimmy?
Have you said leave a review on iTunes?
Leave a review on iTunes!
That's it.
Yeah, that's it, bye.